Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lions Watch, the Football Ramble's regular look at what's going on with the England men's football team. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Believe it or not, the World Cup is only 7 weeks away, and although things may feel a little different this time round, as we miss the optimistic rays of the summer sun and the looming promise of a pint-soaked beer garden, we'll still be with you every step of the way as Gareth's gang gear up for another go at glory. So here on Lions Watch, Luke and I will be with you every Saturday between now and the tournament, reporting on all the latest news and talking points, good and bad, from the three Lions. There'll also be plenty of room for you to have your say. And there's already so much to get stuck into, as last week Jude Bellingham shone and Harry Maguire sank during a Nations League campaign that didn't quite go to plan.
That's a lovely touch. Lampard! Brilliant!
It was in now!
That surely crossed the line! Given.
Well, that was the worst performance I've ever seen from an England team, ever. We were totally hopeless for 90 minutes.
It's another wretched night for England at a major tournament.
And did you also miss a left-footed player down the left side?
Yeah, but where is that player?
How are we going to win this tournament as England?
Oh,
And England win on penalties!
A semi-final won by England at long, long last.
Here we are again, Luke Moore. It's Lions watch time, baby.
It's come around so fast, hasn't it?
It has come around so fast, and that's exactly what we wanted.
Yeah. I would ideally get to a situation where there would be absolutely no break at all between international tournaments. So basically, when the team wins it, they lift the trophy, very nice, all that ticker tape, the fireworks in the stadium, all that kind of stuff, bundle them in a bus, you're off to the next one. See what Jürgen Klopp thinks about that.
Can we have a super-de-duper league where it's just it's the international teams and we play them every week?
I think the people who are planning the European Super League have missed a remarkable trick. Because all they could do to get your unwavering support as a big influencer in the football space, Marcus, is just to put them in international strips.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'd be all over it.
But honestly, right, if I'm there, as disgusted I was at the Super League, everybody was, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, there we go, Liverpool, blah, 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 England, all right, I'm on board. We're in there.
Speller doing the hosting of the Ramble episode where it breaks and he just sees the word England on the running order and he just goes, let's not be hasty.
Let's talk about it. Let's give it a go for a couple of seasons. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Anyway.
But of course, the nearest thing to the Super League at international level is, of course, the UEFA Nations League. And England are relegated, as we know. But let's start with some good news, for crying out loud. We don't want to bring everybody down. Good news for England, of course, is Jude Bellingham's performances for the Three Lions. He's been a very good player, despite still being a teenager, of course. But his teammates certainly appreciated his performance as well. I'm going to quote Jordan Henderson here, who said, I like Jude. I think he's an amazing player. He's a fantastic professional, and his mentality is really key for his development. I almost don't want to big him up too much because he's still a young lad. I'm sure he'll have a big part to play in Qatar, but I'd rather start than him, is maybe not what he finished the quote by saying. But that is something that England fans will hopefully find a little bit of solace in, despite the poor performances and the goals against Germany. It was Jude Bellingham's performances, Luke?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've known Jude has been a good player for a long while. Obviously, we make a show with Andy, and he sees him a lot more than most of us, and has talked about his potential for a very long time. But I do think in the way that football is covered these days, and the way it works, is you do need to see a showpiece performance or several showpiece performances for, I think, the world or the people who are interested in it as a subject to go, okay, now in my mind, he's now flicked from being potential to actually being a really important player. Mm. And I think you've probably seen the vestiges of that with Bellingham on Monday night in the 3-3 against Germany.
Right, he was a player of the match, incidentally.
He was, and I think if you look at the stats and you do the eye test, if you actually watch the game, I think you'd be very, very hard-pressed to argue with that. And I also think it fits into quite a nice long tradition of, well, not nice, but just a tradition of England teams with these talismanic-type players. Marcus, you and I over the years have talked about this a lot, and it can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. The way it can be a bad thing is because it can heap a lot of pressure on individual players when it's not, you know, conducive to good performances and good results. And the way it can be a good thing is it gets people excited. I think in a weird way, given what's happened since and given the type of player he is when compared to Bellingham, it kind of happened a bit with Grealish, didn't it, going into the last tournament?
Yeah. I think Grealish is... I think the fact that Grealish wasn't starting games, people are like, bring him on, you know, that kind of impact sub sort of vibe. Whereas Bellingham hasn't really played much at all, if any, at tournaments for England. And he's come along, well, I say come along, him being put in the side and playing well and developing as a player, it's all come probably at the right time because, of course, Calvin Phillips has been injured and we're not sure if he's going to make Qatar at all. I mean, I think if he's fit, he will go. He's been a crucial player for England in recent years. And him and Rice were very good together in the centre of the pitch. Whereas if he's not there, mind you, even if he is there, Bellingham has really made the case for himself starting because he's a type of player, Andy said as well. England don't have many players like that. And Declan Rice himself said of his recent new midfield partner, he's 19, but he's got the body of a 28-year-old. He's a man! He thinks like a man, plays like a man. I don't think I've seen anyone as good as he is for 19. He's got the whole package. Now, calm down, Declan. Stay focused on your job, for crying out loud. You're just marvelling at him. But he's right. And I've one of the things, and that interesting, when he says he thinks like a man, Bellingham in interviews does come across actually quite mature and quite confident, but not arrogant and not pampered or anything like that. You know, sometimes with footballers nowadays, people think, oh, he comes across very arrogant or very insular, blah, 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 blah. Bellingham does come across as quite a well-rounded and grounded young chap.
Yeah.
And he's got all the tools, of course. And I've wanted to see him start for England for a while. In fact, you and I, when we put our 11s together for England's opening match against Iran, which I thoroughly regret now, of course, with some of the reactions.
But there's no right answer to that. You're always going to get hammered on social media, mate. It's just
well, we put what we'd maybe like to see in a kind of an ideal world. But we both started Bellingham, is the point.
Yes, we did.
To say.
And I think to be fair, if you look at all the other mainstream football outlets now who are starting to do these, you know, ideal 11s for the first game for England, mm-hmm. I think all of them have Bellingham in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that probably shows you. And I think you're probably, in many ways, out of the two of us, the best person to comment on Bellingham having the body of a 28-year-old, because, of course, you're fortunate enough to have the body of a 28-year-old yourself, aren't you? So,
28-year-old what?
Yeah, 28-year-old dog.
You need to specify which... With an average life expectancy of about, I don't know, sort of 12 to 15 years.
I just checked out. Yeah,
to come back on the
point around Phillips as well, is that you know, he may or may not go. You know, Guardiola said that, you know, he thinks he should be ready. He's, either way, Guardiola's, you know, not really picking him when he is fit. So I mean, he's played 13 minutes of competitive football since his move. So that tells you its own story. And that's not a criticism of Guardiola. His priorities are obviously different. He has to put a winning team together, and we all understand that. But I do think Bellingham coming in the same position as Phillips, but as a better player, is hugely beneficial for Southgate, because the big criticism of Southgate has been that he's not progressive enough, that he's too cautious. And Bellingham is that transitional, much more forward-thinking player than Phillips is. And there were several examples of that on Monday night. You know, he doesn't take the simple option. And I speak as someone who as a football fan, who doesn't mind at all players knowing their limitations, players who break things up and give it simple. But Bellingham can see beyond the simplest pass, and he can make England a lot more transitional. And I think that's a really important positive thing, particularly when I think it's fair to argue that despite him being absolutely fantastic since he's broken through as a professional player, I don't think Declan Rice has really hit his straps this season yet. And West Ham have found it fairly difficult in comparison to earlier seasons. So, all that is a very positive thing, and is absolutely why old Jude is in the top of our good news section this week, Marcus.
Very much so, yeah. I think, interestingly enough, on Guardiola and Calvin Phillips, Guardiola did say, I don't know how long Calvin Phillips will be out for. I'm not a doctor. But I bet he does act like a doctor when he's in the surgery.
Crucially, he's got access to several doctors every day in his work. So he could just ask someone. You know.
I think the doctors very much keep Pep at a great distance from what they do.
Oh, he's here again.
Yeah.
Put your stethoscope in.
Imagine him turning up at surgery. Ah, blimey, I don't need this.
Just put your stethoscope in on anything. Just to look busy.
Why are you not a surgeon yet? You know, it's a crucial position for England. England have struggled in that position really since I can remember. I mean, it really is a central midfield battle. England often come over as second best when they play against big teams. Southgate is trying to play a little bit more, well, progressive, as you've said, believe it or not, everybody. I think that's the plan, because England against Croatia in the semi-final, against, you can even say the Netherlands in the semi-final of UEFA Nations League, if I can dare mention that tournament again. And of course, in the Euros final against Italy, there was just that lack of being able to hold the ball, being able to do anything with the ball, actually, you know. And I think with that transitional play that Bellingham is good at, picking the ball up on the half turn and so on, I think England actually, to try and sort of talk about why can't we keep possession, why the next generation will do that better because they've been coached. I know that it's changing, but England are not going to suddenly turn into a possession-based side when they play against the best.
We've also got to maintain some kind of realism here, because I think when it comes to tournament success, who can we honestly say in the modern era has won tournaments, actually won them, by playing really progressive attacking football. And they all the response to that normally is, oh, that Spain dynasty, that dynastic Spain team in 08, 10, 12. But they didn't really play. There's a lot of 1-0s, and there's a lot of kind of holding the ball as a defensive tactic, because when you've got the ball, the Spanish philosophy then was that the other team couldn't score. It was rooted in defensive-minded play, I think.
The possession-based, they kept possession.
So we can't be too progressive, is what I'm saying.
No, totally, but they kept possession so the other team couldn't have the ball, and it was actually a defensive kind of tactic. You're absolutely right. So Bellingham...
Good news to start with, though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Bellingham will be a big part of this side, providing he stays fit, all the usual caveats.
I was about to say, look forward to his November injury.
Yeah, indeed. but we certainly hope he can stay fit for obvious reasons. Let's bring some bad news to the table. It won't surprise anybody, of course, that we are going to talk about Harry Maguire, because it was a bit of a gamble by Southgate. And Southgate clearly used these games to stand by Maguire and say, no, he is a big part of my team. And Maguire has been a big part of Southgate's side over Southgate's tenure as England manager. All of Maguire's 47 caps have been under Southgate. And Maguire has played well. The England fans have taken to him. They've got that chant about him and so on and so forth. But we fast forward back to today, if you see what I mean. And he's not playing for Manchester United. We know his form's not been great. In fact, that's generous. His form has been dreadful. Ahead of the Euros, his form wasn't great and he had an injury. But he came into the side and he showed immediately, there he is, and hit the ground running in those Euros. And actually, when he wasn't in the side against Croatia, I think people thought, oh, actually, he's more important. Those days are well and truly in the past now. And he looks like he could be a liability for England.
This is a therapy session for you, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Get it all out, mate. Everybody. Don't boil it up.
So I don't know, Luke.
And he's let us down. What he's done is he's let us down.
I just want him to be good again. I can see him in the room with me now.
The difference is, Mark, is you want him to be good again. I kind of don't necessarily care who's good as long as the people who play are good, if you know what I mean.
I just like singing the song.
Yeah, fair enough. But did the England fans still sing the song? I mean, is that?
Well, they did at the Euros, yeah.
Yeah, okay, and that's the most recent kind of tournament.
But it was reported that Maguire stayed behind at Wembley for almost 2 hours after the Germany game to hold a private chat.
Trying to intercept the through ball, was he? No, I'll be up to full speed in a minute.
Just one more game. Can you organise just one more game?
Look, I think. Look, it is the bad news section, so Harry Maguire is going to be a part of it. I think I spoke a bit on Monday, didn't I, about how I feel about it and the fact that... I think Southgate knew he was taking a gamble, which is against his better nature, I believe, and it hasn't paid off. And that's fine. Part of operating at the very top level and whatever you're doing is you have to gamble and take chances, and with those chances occasionally comes success. So I don't begrudge him taking the gamble, but it hasn't paid off, and it does leave a big question mark over what he does if we're both convinced that he's going to start that first game with a back three, which I think we are. I would throw it back to you, I think, and say, what do you think he should do, given he's seen what he's seen? There's going to be no opportunities for Maguire to pull the England shirt on ahead of the World Cup. And given that we don't necessarily think Erik ten Hag's going to do any of us a favour, right? So
yeah.
I'll chuck it back at you. What do you think is the best thing to do?
Well, I think we all need to put a lot of pressure on ten Hag. I think you need to start this, man.
Campaign starts here.
Yeah, don't bite the hand that feeds you, is what I would say to him. But on a more serious note, though, I think that unless Maguire gets back into that Manchester United side, which seems incredibly unlikely, and unless he gets back into the side because he's been, you know, showing something in training, and then any time he's been given a chance, he shows something, and his performance has improved drastically. I just don't see how Southgate can start him. I understand Southgate has stuck by him there, and I think. What Southgate really wanted out of this time was to put him in there to Maguire for Maguire, a bit like the Euros, hadn't played for a while and there was question marks over his form, to again hit the ground running and show everybody, actually, you see, he's still a big part of this defence, and it would be a confidence booster for Maguire.
Yeah, definitely. That's totally right.
And everyone would go, oh, okay, well, I suppose, because Southgate said when he first joined as England manager, I'm going to pick players on form and so on. They are just words. That is relevant to people... like, say, Eric Dyer. Eric Dyer has been in good form and he's got back into the side.
In a way, Marcus, he has to say, you're right, it's shown up to be completely false, but there is an element of that where you have sympathy with the coach because he has to kind of say that. He has to think that there are players out there playing at a very high level who I may need in 6 months' time. Yeah. And I need them to know that if they play really well and I need to call upon them, I will. Otherwise, it's not a motivational technique for them, is it? To say, oh no, I've got my team and that's that, thanks very much.
Yeah, and
he can't say that. That'd be a preposterous thing for him to say. So I do have sympathy for him saying that. I do also agree with you that I think it's bollocks.
Yeah, but I think some people are motivated in different ways. And also, again, if you've played really well for Southgate and you have a little bit of a dip in form, not Maguire, I'm saying Maguire shouldn't start now, but if you have a bit of a dip in form and maybe you're not used as much or whatever, even take Grealish, who's not starting that much for Manchester City, he's coming to the side a little bit. Is Southgate really going to go, no, I have to stay true to my word? Southgate is going to use that word when it suits him. And all managers do that to varying degrees because not all players are treated the same. Nobody's treated the same. It's very, very difficult and sometimes unwise to take that approach. But with Maguire, I think that Eric Dyer showed that he's worthy of a starting place in this side. And Dyer plays in the middle of a three, whereas I think before, in the Euros and all, it would be John Stones in that role. Maguire to his left and Kyle Walker on the right of the three. And I think Walker will be there. Mings came in when England played a back four against Croatia. But I think a defensive three of, say, Eric Dyer in the middle with John Stones, it would have to be on the left. And then Kyle Walker on the right side of that defensive three. I think that's not bad at all.
Given that this is the bad news section, you wouldn't extrapolate that bad news out to England have a defensive problem generally. You would say this Harry Maguire gamble hasn't paid off, so that's a question mark over what Southgate does specifically with him. But wider conversations around defence, you're less worried about.
Yeah, I suppose so, because I think with this Nations League campaign, Southgate used the first game against Hungary all the way back at the start of summer when they lost 1-0. He used that as an experiment and he thought, well, worst off, we're not going to lose the game because Hungary are just not going to come at us at all. And we'll have enough quality to win the game. So I kind of understand that. It was just a Reece James mistake and Hungary scored the penalty and England lose. Then England play away in Germany and so he tries to do something else. But England showed, I'm pretty sure it was the Germany game second, forgive me if that's wrong, but certainly at the start of the campaign. And then England obviously get a spirited draw in when they fight back. And then he thinks, right, we've got the two home games against Italy and Hungary. We'll do something there. They don't beat Italy. And then, of course, Hungary is just one of those disastrous games where you think, hang on, it's a little bit of a freak in one sense, a little bit of a, actually, this is quite worrying. When these two games then come along, there's pressure. You don't want to be relegated. You've got to show a bit of something. And also, they are the last two games before the World Cup begins. And I think Southgate thinks, right, okay, we've got to sort of nail down the pressure's on. Okay, and I'm gonna for those reasons he stuck with Maguire, but by then it's all a bit disjointed and so on. I think when the tournament begins, and they will have a bit of time on the training ground beforehand, although not that much. But when the tournament begins, I just remind people of England defensively in the Euros. Actually, they were pretty solid. They talked about the Yorkshire Wall of Walker, Stones, and Maguire, and they were pretty tight. Did they play against huge, like really good quality opposition? Yeah, it could have been played against more, but Italy did win the tournament and were probably the best side of the tournament and only scored one goal through a set piece against England. So I'm not as worried as some are about the defence if I think he makes that change and brings Maguire out of there. So,
well, I mean, England only conceded two goals in that whole tournament, didn't they?
Exactly, yeah. And Pickford's got to come in because, Nick Pope, I don't think has... Obviously, there was the mistake at the end. I don't think Pope is the number one. I would have Ramsdale as number two, although Ramsdale was in goal.
I think that's been the chat, hasn't it, this week. I mean, things do change, and pretty quickly, Pope makes that mistake. The reason I think that's more impactful for him is because he's seen as someone who's entirely safe as a pair of hands. He's not seen as someone who's a dynamic, risk-taking, start and attack goalkeeper like Pickford kind of is. Mm-hmm. And I think he's. Ultimately, it probably won't matter because all things being equal, he won't play a single minute in the World Cup anyway, and he's almost guaranteed to be in the squad. So it's obviously disappointing from him on a personal level, but I think you're right. I think Ramsdale's a far more similar goalkeeper to Pickford, and if you're setting your team up in a tournament situation to play a certain way, well, you're going to bring someone in if Pickford's unavailable that's most suited, right? And so to me, it doesn't really make a huge amount of difference. I find this is a bit disappointing for a likeable character who's a good goalkeeper and who doesn't want to make that kind of mistake in a high profile game. Beyond that, I'm not sure it really matters.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's go for a quick break. But just to sort of summarise, I'm concerned about Maguire, but actually the wider point about the defence, I don't think it's actually as bad as maybe some people are making out. But we will hear from our good listeners in the second half. See you in a moment.
Nice to see home fans being here. Football
supporters. With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back, everybody. Right, big Lukey Moore, what's next? How are we starting this second half?
So far, so good. And I think the first half was definitely right, Mark, because it was a far cheaper way of therapy than we thought for you. So it's worked out very, very well. Second half, we're gonna do a brand new feature, right? Because last year in Lions Watch, we talked about tournaments gone by, didn't we? And that was our big thing that we did in the second half. We can't do that again. A bit lazy.
I'm cured of that.
So yeah, exactly. So this time, this season, this series, we're going to do what I've called the take thermometer.
Oh,
okay. The take thermometer. So the way it works is,
putting the thermometer?
Yeah, right up your bot. we're going to put the thermometer right up the bot of a big take that we've seen relating to the England team this week. I'm going to explain the take to you, Marcus, using the headline and using the general crux of what a pundit has said. And I want you and I to discuss whether we think it's a hot take or not. And we'll come to a decision about the temperature of the take. Is it a piping hot, fire in the belly take? Or is it a freezing cold, is it a freezing cold shit take? Is it a hot take or is it a load of old bollocks, basically? So we're going to start. I think the best place to start is... ubiquitous super pundit Gary Neville.
Right.
And he's had the following take this week relating to the England team. The headline was this: Gary Neville backs Gareth Southgate in England to peak at the World Cup. He's basically saying and suggesting that England will still do well at the World Cup, and the poor results can largely be explained by a lack of motivation to play in what he calls friendly style Nations League games. He suggests that as a former player and coach, he understands these games don't inspire players as much as the real meaningful ones do, and that the tournament is where England need to peak and where they have peaked over the past two tournaments. So, in summary, the headline, Marcus: Gary Neville backs Gareth Southgate and England to peak at the World Cup. Take it away. Is that a hot take or not?
I think that is a a medium hot take, actually.
Okay.
Because I do agree with him. When he says peak, I'm not sure if they'll peak as a team under Southgate. I think we may have seen the peak at the Euros.
No, but in this mini cycle, I think he means.
In this mini cycle. Yeah, no, I actually, this is me being hopeful, but I think he's got a point. I think this is a good take because before the last two tournaments under Southgate, before we got into them, England didn't look that great. It wasn't as bad as this, but I think England, you know, they did look a little bit slow and so on. So I think Neville might have a point here. I don't think that's too bad.
Okay, so the way I approached it was by looking at the numbers and looking at the data, and I went back to, I went through every tournament from 2010 onwards, which I think was kind of, as we go before 2010, it starts to get a little bit less relevant, I think. Yeah. And if you look at the lead up to 2010, the World Cup in South Africa, England won all three of their friendlies in March and May, and then went into the World Cup looking absolutely shit and were knocked out in the second round handily by Germany, of course. 2012, there was a lot of upheaval, wasn't there? But they lost, if you remember, Marcus, which I'm sure you do, they lost a friendly to Netherlands, 3-2 at home.
Yeah.
Then they beat Norway and Belgium. And then how would you describe their campaign in 2012? Poor again, I suppose?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, not that good. Although we did watch them against Sweden in Kyiv, and that was a nice evening for us.
It was.
Let's not be too critical.
Not really the big picture, though, is it? We had a nice night out.
What is going to football if it's not a nice time out, you know?
Keep it relatable. 2014, England again undefeated in the preparation. 4 international friendlies, 1-2, drew 2, and then had a horrific time at 2014. Mm-hmm. 2016, again, they lost 2-1 in that build-up to Netherlands, Marcus. That's probably what you're thinking of. But they won the three games leading up to the Euros.
Yep.
And then, again, the nadir probably of Hodgson's reign, they lost to Iceland. 2018, again, very, very positive start. And then go through to the semi-final. And then 2020, the build-up to the Euros, which of course was in 2021 in the end. It was a bit of an odd one because they played some qualification games for the World Cup because of the pushback tournament because of COVID. But they had two friendlies leading up to it and they won both of them without conceding the goal and then got through to the final. My point being that I think it's a fairly poor take overall, because England in recent times and in squads that Gary Neville has been a part of, either as a player or as a coach, England have looked very good going into tournaments and then have disappointed.
Yeah.
And that's been part of the reason that our expectations have been so high, right? So he's now saying it's the opposite would probably be the case, chiefly because Gareth Southgate's record recently has been very good.
Yeah, no, I think that is a fair point, because actually there was a piece in The Athletic this week which showed you all the teams that have won the World Cup since in the 21st century, and not just won the World Cup, reached the final as well. They've all had very good, like in the five matches before the World Cup, they've either been undefeated or they've won them all. You know, they've looked good going into the tournament. All the teams that have gone all the way, even the teams that have got to the semi-finals, have looked all right. Whereas actually England's record going into this tournament is very, very bad. And if you look at it but with that yardstick, then England aren't going to go far. But then you can bring in other sort of, you know, you could spin this around and bring in other facts. And, you know, when was the last time a country further east than, say, you know, Germany or Italy ever reached a final? Well, Croatia did it last time, whereas before that would have been 1950 maybe in Hungary or something like that. So,
right.
You know, forgive me if that's slightly wrong, but, you know, it's that kind of thing. So, but the reason why I think Southgate's take isn't bad, because I just think that England, during these things, I think the two friendlies, or the, not friendlies, the two Nations League games at, going into the summer, the players were knackered. They just wanted it to be over. And I think the way Southgate kind of set up against Hungary in the first game, and it kind of...
Yeah, timing's a part of this, isn't it, for sure?
That kind of did it. And actually, it was that freak game against Hungary, 4-0, I think that really influenced kind of like everything that kind of that went after that, and they're kind of chasing their tail a bit. So I don't think England will be this bad come the tournament,
right?
Really.
So why not? I mean, this show isn't sponsored by Nando's, but use the Nando's periometer.
Yeah, okay.
Extra mild, medium hot, or extra hot.
Yeah.
What do you think of that take? Gary Neville backs Gareth Southgate and England to peak at the World Cup. Tell me how hot you think that is on the periometer.
I think it's medium.
Okay, so you think you can see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Is every chance out. I would give it, I'm not going to say it's extra mile because I don't think it's bang wrong. Mm. I think that he's probably looking for positivity because...
As am
I. For whatever reason. Yeah, of course, and you are too. And so he's trying to give England a bit of space because I think that the premise of him saying this was that I think Fizzer piped up saying that, you know, the negativity's back around the England team and we're always like this as fans, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to call it mild. Mm. So you're going medium, I'm going mild. It's certainly not a hot take.
No.
But, that's the take thermometer for this week. We'll have another one next week, Marcus.
Lovely, lovely, yeah. No, I think...
Maybe our listeners will tell us what they think about it as well.
I'm sure they will. I mean, well, okay, so that leads us on nicely then to your news, everybody, which is us asking you a question and seeing what you think of it all. And the question we posed to you on social media was, did England versus Germany, of course, the 3-3 at Wembley, make you more or less confident for the World Cup and why? So...
Do you want to take the less confidence and I'll take the more confidence?
I think it's a good idea. So we got one from Paul, who these are the less confidence, and he said, concerned, how are we going to break down teams who set up to defend? It's a good point. And you would have thought that. I mean, Andy certainly said that against Iran in England's opening game. You would imagine they're going to set up to defend. Well, again, Paul, we just need Jude Bellingham to be his very, 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 very best. And hopefully that he will become our Zinedine Zidane.
Where's that come from? Where has we listen? Half an hour in, I thought this has been good. He's kept it. I mean, normally I expect this kind of stuff about a week
out. Here we go.
No, but can I come back on Paul's point because I think it's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
But I'm less concerned about that than Paul and about than you and then Andy, chiefly because the Bellingham thing that's important. But also, I think England and this is caveated by. Assuming that Southgate is going to utilise these players.
Yeah.
But we've got a 26-man squad and we've got five subs to choose from, right? We have an array of attacking players that we can use that in those front three positions and even actually out wide in those wing-back positions, assuming Gareth plays a 3-4-3, that I think can overcome a variety of different challenges. So if a team are going to sit really deep, say like we assume Iran will...
Mm.
Maybe you don't use your really pacey forwards because they can just soak it up. Maybe bring
Foden
a Grealish in.
Or
a Foden to play between the lines or a Mount or whatever.
Mm.
There are an array of attacking options, array of tools in the toolbox that Southgate can use if he wants to. And that to me feels, with the greatest respect to Paul, that to me feels a bit like an older fashioned type criticism of England, which I'm not necessarily sure is the case now.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. And I think that Southgate starting Foden in the two games, actually, and I, you know, if we were choosing our starting, well, not maybe for the not for the Iran game, but just maybe against better opposition, I think maybe Saka should start because England will have to play a bit deeper and play more as a unit. Whereas, as you say, if they've got a little bit more of the field, then maybe. Okay, well, I've got one here from Oliver. Who says, less confident, relying on England heroics never ends well. Would like to have seen more control. That does resonate with me, actually, Oliver.
Right.
I totally agree with that. I think that I said to this point on the Ramble on Monday, or on Ramble Reacts on Tuesday, rather, that England, when it became a bit more like a Premier League game and a bit hectic, then England kind of went, all right, we know what we're doing here. And yes, of course, it's a confidence booster to score those goals. And we'll see how much of an effect that has, if any, on this England team. But they didn't have control really in any of those games, I didn't think.
Yeah.
And so, yes, my concern about off the back of the Euros, I thought we were one of the favourites for the World Cup and I thought we've got a real chance now. Come on, I can't wait for this tournament. But I actually, I would agree with that and I'm less confident after these games and I just think...
Right, so... Sure.
But I don't think England will be as bad
in
the World Cup as they have. I think they will be better. So that's why I went medium on Gary Neville.
I feel like on Oliver's point, I think it's fair. And I think there are two ways to approach this. One is you go, how have the teams that have won tournaments recently done it? And it's been quite solid, right? Mm. And it's been like quite in control and solid and everything like that. So you either try and do that, assuming that England are good enough to do that against the good teams, or you just throw caution to the wind and go, you know what? You have a go, we have a go, and we'll trust, you know, see what happens kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think in the Germany game, that's probably partly what happened because England probably, when they went 2-0 down, they got to the point where they were like, shit, I mean, now we can't get any worse than this, and there's no time left to amend this. It's either now or never, and they went for it. And to be fair to them, they were one uncharacteristic goalkeeping mistake away from winning that game 3-2, at which point everyone would have been like, fucking hell, that is amazing. Well, they would have been, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And so these margins are very fine, but I think Oliver makes a really, really fair point. Now, some of our listeners and social media followers were more confident, and I've got a couple here. One from Joe, who says, I'm now more confident. Like Luke, I thought we'd lose and that would result in some distracting and toxic negativity in the run-up to the tournament. The Germany performance should keep all that below the boil now. A big part of Southgate's England generally has been moving away from that kind of atmosphere, which I think is a really interesting point, Marcus.
Yeah, I do as well, and I think that it got everybody going at Wembley because we had the boos at San Siro and there was a little bit of that at Wembley, but suddenly the mood did change. I mean, watching the game, because I know a lot of other nations would say this, but we want it so much and we've enjoyed this team. And I think in this Nations League campaign, everyone's going, where are the boys? We've loved this team. We've loved this.
Is it lads? We thought it was lads.
Yeah.
Where are they gone?
Where are the lads? What happened to the likely lads?
Where's the pylons?
Exactly. Where's all that? And then suddenly, it's like, oh, hang on. We did see that,
Marcus. We did see that in the celebration of, I think it was the third goal.
That's right.
The players went crazy.
Exactly.
And you thought, here we are again.
And the fact is that I think they had lift off. You know, Declan Rice said after the Italy game, I think he said, like, we will come good. We'll come good or something like that.
And I think they, when that third goal went in.
Because they know and they're like, ah, come on.
And they celebrated like that, Marcus.
I heard, despite already being relegated.
Yeah. I heard that you just screamed to your wife, clear tomorrow's diary. I'm back. I am back, baby.
No need for tomorrow's therapy, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm cured.
I think we'll leave the final point from our friend Robbie, who's got in touch to say, I feel more confident. It's not the best prep, but this World Cup doesn't have a clear favourite, and now I feel like anything could happen. I think that's quite a nice summary, actually. Some people would say or point to France being a big favourite, I suppose.
They've been four.
But they've had a really difficult time. So I think it's a reasonable thing to end on to say that, you know, let's keep this in perspective. Do we have a standout kind of favourite for this tournament anyway? I don't know what you think about that, Marcus.
Yeah, I would say to Joe, I get what you're saying, but have a look at what Brazil have been doing, and they're very much due a World Cup win.
Yeah, so Brazil are the favourites, France second favourites, Argentina third favourites, and then England fourth favourites.
Oh, we've dropped down to fourth. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, the odds are working, I mean, it's not like people are like, wow, these guys are far and away easily the favourites. I mean, it's still quite tight.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm glad that I think England was second favourites not that long ago. So we'll probably be about sixth or seventh or eighth by the time Qatar comes around, maybe.
We're knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we've lost our first two group games.
Anyway,
there we are, everybody.
Lars Watch is back, officially.
It's here, and it's here to stay until the tournament begins, of course, because we will be with you next Saturday and every Saturday until the start of that World Cup in Qatar. But before that, we will be seeing you, of course, for the usual ramble on Monday, rounding up the best action from the weekend. So there we are. Thank you very much for listening. Luke, a pleasure.
Yeah, great. And I'll just add that, if you want to get involved in Lars Watch every Saturday, keep an eye on the socials at Football Ramble, because we'll put questions out there, give you a chance to get involved. And we always like hearing from fellow England fans or even people who are just excited for England to fall on their faces and want to tell us so. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, which definitely is a part of the listenership of this show.
Quite a large part, I think, if the correspondent.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him,
Listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
To be relieved. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to the next one. Cheers, Marcus.
Absolutely. See you all soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.